Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 50. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com. Ben Flanagan of Aspect Radio. Franco Usmile of Dawn of the Dad. Matt Scalisi, editor of FilmNerds.com.
Hello, Graham. How are you?
Hey, Ben. How's it going? I'm doing well.
Good. So, for our 50th episode, I thought it'd be fun to pick a great big category, and each of us film nerds weigh in on what our three favorites are in each of categories, who the all-timers are in this category. So we'll hopefully get to do this every milestone episode. So first off, I thought we would go with, the topic that comes up very often on Film Nerds Unlimited, which is directors. So we'll start with you, Graham, and you just tell me, who are your all-timer directors, the top three? Go for it.
Well, I'll start. I've got three in mind, even though this is really tough, but to make a list like this. But I think that there are definitely three that come to mind, and I'll start with number three and work my way up to number one. And number three would be Woody Allen, whose sort of consistency and ability to be so prolific by turning out a movie every year for the last like 40 years, if not longer. Is just truly unmatched by any of his contemporaries, and he's spanned, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and now two decades into the aughts. I mean, it's just amazing. And no one has had that kind of productivity, and when you look at each movie, and I'm a fan of his, obviously, this is why he's so high up on my list, but I've only been disappointed, God, probably less than five times. I generally really like, if not love, everything he's done. A few examples that don't really make the cuts that spring to mind would be like To Rome with Love, or Anything Else. Also, Whatever Works, those being a few of the ones that really stick out to me. But even the ones that generally don't get a lot of acclaim, such as like Melinda and Melinda, You Will Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger, a lot of the movies in recent years that people sort of poo-pooed and ignored, I really enjoyed. And so, you know, just the amount of classics he's made over the years absolutely puts him on the list. For me, he's really, you know, introduced me to a whole different ways of thinking about people and relationships, but at the end of the day, has made me laugh for years. He's one of the great comic minds of all time, and you know the fact that he's been able to combine that with his seemingly deep understanding of humanity, or if not understanding, then just you know, just being the fact that he's perplexed by the way that people treat each other has just been a great piece of art that we can always depend on every year. To you know, get a new chapter from him, and his body of work is amazing and just continues to grow. So Woody Allen definitely makes the list of the top three.
What's your what was your first Woody Allen movie
that I ever saw?
Yeah,
I think it was Annie Hall. I think our dad just kind of got us started with the, you know, what a lot of people consider to be the best, the most popular, sort of the essential Woody Allen movie. And that started there, and I sort of fell in love with it. And from there, saw everything gradually, thanks to the public library and cable and video stores. And I think the first Woody Allen movie I saw in the theater was Deconstructing Harry in 1997 when I was 15. So that was a great one, a fun one to see in the theater. So, and it was tough because, I mean, he would get, when he was in his sort of Miramax period back in the 90s, those movies would expand wide, especially during Oscar season. So got to see a few of those, like Celebrity, Everyone Says I Love You, during that period. and have seen most of them. Not all, definitely not all of them. Like, I didn't see Sweet and Low Down in the theater in 99, but have seen pretty much everything else in theaters. So, absolutely.
Yeah, so,
and I think and I love his most recent movie, Irrational Man, with Joaquin Phoenix. I thought it was very strong.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So, I mean, so you basically spent your teenage years like everybody else seeking out obscure Woody Allen movies.
Definitely late teens. My obsession with his work and you know, sort of commitment to seeing all of his movies, the dozens of movies that he's made, definitely happened when I was in college and was sort of sparked by my exposure to honestly, Sweet and Low Down. Really, that really got me excited because I feel like, and I still feel like that's one of his best movies ever, and if not my favorite. So that got me into, you know, going back and especially looking at all the work from the 80s, the Hannah and Her Sisters, and then and all the 70s stuff, the funnier comedies, the, you know, everything. So I got really into that in college and spent a lot of time absorbing his and enjoying his work in college for sure. Like, I remember I did a long paper for one of Jeremy Butler's film criticism classes on what I consider to be a very underrated movie, Midsummer Night's Sex Comedy. And that movie features what a lot of his movies, especially from the 70s and 80s, include is just amazing cinematography from people like Gordon Willis and Carlo De Palma and Sven Nykvist. Cinematography has just always been a huge part of his work, and it has exposed me to a lot of those guys, and I've been able to since like go and seek out all their other stuff. But, you know, those DPs, some of the best DPs ever, did some of their best work with Woody Allen, you know? So it's not all about gags. It's not all about dialogue. It's he definitely understands it's a visual medium. And if you go back and kind of look at the trajectory of his career, he says that he really learned how to make movies on Annie Hall thanks to Gordon Willis. So the DP has always been integral to you know, his growth as a storyteller and an artist, which is you know, you have to have an appreciation for the cinematographer because they truly are, in my opinion, the key collaborator with the director. You know, once you have a script, obviously everything grows from the script, but the DP is the absolute most important artist and technician on that set. Number two would be Stanley Kubrick for sure. I mean, a lot of people would, you know, probably laugh at me for saying that he's not number one, but whatever, you know, that's just my take. His filmography is just unbelievable. I think he finished so strong with Eyes Wide Shut, which, you know, we probably still don't even understand the real meaning of that movie. Maybe it'll come out later in like an unearthed journal or something, but finished so strong with that, but left behind so many classics. The early work is outstanding. The Killing, Paths of Glory, you know, then getting into sort of, and then Lolita, of course, and Doctor Strangelove, and then you get into sort of the Warner Brothers. Well, first, then you have 2001: A Space Odyssey, which is one of the greatest movies of all time, still maybe one of the greatest technical achievements of all time. Then you get into sort of his Warner Brothers period in the 70s and 80s with Clockwork Orange, Barry Lyndon, The Shining, Full Metal Jacket. Those are just all movies that have been, you know, huge for me. It's just showing you the possibility of cinema. And so then ending with Eyes Wide Shut, I mean, the guy is just unbelievable in terms of his technical contributions. That his influence is just so vast on all aspects of art as we know it in the world today. And his movies are so entertaining. I mean, he definitely has a dark side. You know, it's like, well, his movies are all have a sort of a dark aspect, you know, to them in terms of theme. I mean, every single one of them. So they're not like fun. You know, a lot of Woody Allen movies, on the other hand, like you can just watch those as like fun little desserts and sit down and enjoy them. But Stanley Kubrick movies are going to absorb every bit of your being, your attention, your consciousness. Which is what makes him so strong and great and memorable and timeless. So, Stanley Kubrick, obviously, duh. And I doubt he's going to be on anybody else's list.
Yeah, no, everybody else hates that guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's an interesting contrast that you bring up between him and Woody Allen. You know, I mean, you know, Allen's filmography is so dense. You know, he has so much output, and that's one way to be a great filmmaker. You know, is just to make a lot of films, and then another way is to cultivate this very careful and methodical filmography. You know,
yeah,
the Kubrick library. You could pick any movie out of there, and you could make a strong case that it's a masterpiece. He didn't just work. You know, he was really careful, and he was able, you know, to be really careful that way. So it's not, you know, it's not a good or bad thing in either case, but it's just a very interesting contrast between those two careers.
I would say that you know, it is sort of disappointing. Like, you find out about all these projects that Kubrick had that in development that never happened, notably the Napoleon project. And, you know, it's a bummer that he only made, you know, in the 80s, he made The Shining and Full Metal Jacket, two movies in 10 years, and then he had one more after that, Eyes Wide Shut, you know, and you've got guys that, great filmmakers who are able, it's just funny to see how different artists work. With Woody Allen, you have a guy that puts a movie out every year. With Spielberg, you have a guy that puts movies out every 2 to 3 years, you know, and so many more kind of work on that 3 year cycle. And it is a bummer that there's not more, but I mean, the work that he left is so strong that he's got to be in that list, in that conversation.
Absolutely. So did you just spoil who your number one is?
Yeah, I did. I mentioned, yeah, Spielberg for me is my favorite of all time.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, I would say that if you're going to grade on consistency, that both Woody Allen and Kubrick would rate higher than Spielberg, because Spielberg's made a lot of movies that I do not like. I mean, I'm not a fan of, and hopefully one day I'll see him again, have a different perspective on them. But especially in the last 15 years or so, Spielberg, maybe you can even say 20, basically ever since The Lost World is when he sort of, you know, started kind of disappointing me every so often. But, you know, Catch Me If You Can, Minority Report, Amistad, which I really want to give another shot. Those movies did not connect with me, but yet the movies that did, Close Encounters, Jaws, the Indiana Jones movies, E.T., Schindler's List, Empire of the Sun, and you know, even his super early stuff, Duel was huge for me growing up as a teenager. I just loved Duel. You know, Jurassic Park, one of those. It's just that these movies, people say this all the time, but they really did define my childhood, because growing up, like, they were always the big events, the Spielberg movies and the Spielberg productions along with those. You know, but his films, his features were just, you know, the cinematic highlights of my youth, and they hold up. They absolutely hold up. And every time I'd see one in the theater that was new, it was a huge event. Every time I would finally get to see a Spielberg movie on video that I had never seen before, that was a huge event. You know, like, movies I wasn't alive for in their initial runs, like Close Encounters or Jaws, or was too young to see at the time, like Empire of the Sun. Just huge impacts on me. And you go back and Hook, even, you know, that was a huge deal for me as a little kid. And that movie is just it's a flight of fancy, but with some interesting adult themes for sure. You know, and that's the thing, like, he has this consistent theme of fatherhood and of childhood in all of his movies. It's more effective in some than others. And, you know, the characters, the story is always very, very strong and moving. They're not just popcorn entertainments. And he tries everything. And then you have Saving Private Ryan, which is, I mean, technically one of the most audacious and then influential game changers ever in cinema, you know, and nothing has really measured up to what you see in that movie on a visceral level. So he's able to succeed in every aspect of cinematic production and then storytelling. So I, you know, and again, he's had some blips on the radar, in my opinion, even though every one of those movies, along with like AI and others, people, you know, people love. And at the time, you know, when I saw AI, I was like 19 years old and wasn't into it. Maybe my expectations were too high. I think that there are going to be problems with AI. They're going to exist forever, but there's still a lot there that you can appreciate. And, you know, I enjoy hearing people sort of argue with me and tell me why I'm wrong and why I need to give these things another chance. These, you know, you don't just get have to watch movies once. You can watch them over and over again. That's the beauty of them. And you can come back to them and you know, see things you didn't see before. It's so subjective. And, I, you know, that's so his body of work is amazing. It continues to grow with this new one that we're going to get. And then apparently another sort of more fantasy film, BFG. So I just can't wait to see what this guy continues to do. You know, and most recently I love War Horse. I love 1010. So he's, again, continuing just like Woody Allen, the guy that's his career spanned so many decades, continuing to push and try and strengthen his body of work. And, you know, so for me, Spielberg has always been the guy. And, you know, I do want to say that one person that I am leaving off this list, it's really hard to do that, is Alfred Hitchcock. And I think all three of the directors that I listed, Woody Allen, Spielberg, and Kubrick, all are major Hitchcock fans and have copied him and used and adjusted and adapted his techniques, his techniques in order to heighten suspense and audience awareness and things like that. So Alfred Hitchcock certainly deserves to be in the conversation among many, many, many others. But those are the three that really are, you know, their bodies of work are special to me and have, you know, helped me learn about cinema and appreciate it and most importantly enjoy the art form. And those guys, you know, without those guys, I don't know if I would even be as big of a film fan as I am.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's so hard just to pick three, I think it's interesting what you're saying about when I wouldn't be surprised if the rest of us don't pick guys like Hitchcock or you know, or John Ford, or guys like that whose decision-making is in the DNA of every, of the other filmmakers that have come since them, you know? You know, when you pick Spielberg, you're kind of picking Hitchcock because so much of his filmmaking is rooted in Hitchcock. So, yeah, I mean, I know the three is a really tough number to whittle it down to. But even with that, I think there's going to be a lot of overlap with the other guys. So thanks for being my guinea pig on this, Graham, and we'll see what the rest of the guys say.
Yeah, can't wait to hear what the rest of them say. This is really fun. Thanks, Ben.
Okay, Craig. This is a tough question. Nobody enjoys it, but we've got to do it for the sake of our children and their children after them. Who at this moment are your top three favorite directors of all time? Rank them from 3 to 1.
Man, that is a tough one. I can't believe you just sprung that on me without any preparation.
Yep.
Oh, you
gotta wing it.
Well, the question was at this moment.
Right, yeah. Well,
this moment.
We can't be responsible for our opinions in the past or our opinions in the future.
I don't have any responsibility for anything I've done in the past. That's wonderful.
Nope. No, the slate is clean, and, you know, the horizon is bright. But right now, we're just talking about, you know, living the moment.
Oh, okay. I think, okay, so number one, ranked from 3 to 1, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay, right
number
now.
Number three. Yeah.
I'll start with number three, but I think number one would be on there at any point.
Right.
I think. But we'll start with number three, and I'm glad you said it right now because it's just, I've got a list of like 4 through 10. I think right now, and that has to do with movies that have been released by these individuals or movies that I have just personally started to watch more of in the recent past. That's kind of what's driving this right now kind of thing.
Well,
so,
no. I mean, it's of all time, but it's just your feeling, how your feelings on of all time are right now.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be like the best director that's working right now. It's just, you know,
well,
who's your favorite director
yeah.
of all time right now?
Right. Yeah. So not necessarily that what they put out, but that what I have been watching of theirs.
Yeah. Okay, I got you.
Does that make sense? Okay.
Yep.
So number three, I know this is going to be really, I'm going to get some flack for this, but it's as I explained. So, man, I'm just going to make sure, oh, this is really hard. So let me just go with the ones that are not on there. And just say, okay, Sidney Lumet.
No. We'll do runners up after we get
okay.
three to one.
Well, yeah, you already heard one runner up. So
okay.
Spoiler, it's Sidney Lumet.
Yeah.
But I have to say, right now, my favorite director, third favorite director of all time, and it's really close one, but I have to go with Wes Anderson.
Nice.
Okay, because. You know, Grand Budapest came out last year and just blew my mind whole. And so that's kind of just got me, I sort of re-watched all his work again, or most of it again, and it's kind of renewed my appreciation for him. So again, next year, he may not be on there, but he is number three right now, because I think there's no one like him. He's a true auteur. He is completely unique, completely authentic, doesn't really care what anybody thinks, but he doesn't really kind of direct that way. He doesn't direct like, I don't care what you think, I want to do something weird. No, he's just a weird dude, and he makes a great film, so he's my
yeah.
number three.
And he still builds communities. You know, there's a reason that, you know, he's got this troupe that works on so many of his movies. I think he's a great pick, and I think strangely enough, I never thought we would live in a world where this statement would be true, but I think Wes Anderson is an underrated director, and I think just because he's been around so long, people have kind of gotten used to him and have very easily forgotten, this guy's great. He was great when he started. He's continued to be great, and he's just consistently great. So, yeah, great pick.
Yeah, thanks. And even my personal low points for him are always like arguable, because they could be other fans. Like my least favorite is many Wes Anderson fans' favorite.
What is that?
So there's your Life Aquatic.
Boom! There you go. That's my favorite. So
yeah,
case in point.
Yeah, and so it's not like a consensus, oh, he had a low period between the year, you know, whatever. No, it's no one really agrees on the worst or the best, you know,
right.
and as 100%, you know, across the board.
Right.
So, yeah, what about you?
All right.
Are you revealing yours, or are you just –
Oh, no. Yeah, this is a totally one-sided conversation. Whoever I record with last, I'll just do mine. You know, when I wrap up with them. So got a few more film nerds to talk to after I get you off the phone. So
yeah.
So no, this is all on you. There's no
okay.
I'm not gonna absorb your punishment.
Number two all time right now is and I've been the last 2 years I've been going through these phases every few months where I just watch several of his movies right in a row, and recently I watched like four or five in one day. That's Woody Allen.
Nice.
Yeah. So
popular pick so far.
Yeah, I can imagine I won't be the only one that says no. that, but I'm kind of digging into his not his most popular, but I'm finding that. I'm finding that even the ones that, you know, the layman haven't seen are, I'm discovering that, at least personally, that some of these are just as good as his big name ones. So yeah, I recently checked out like 4 or 5 movies of his movies from the library while my wife and daughter were out of town, and got home from work and just like a complete loser, watched them all right in a row.
No, that sounds awesome. That sounds like a good decision.
Yeah. But yeah, I think he's definitely got some stinkers in there. And you know, I guess my goal is to become a completist someday. There's so many that I haven't seen. I think I've seen about 33. But there's this feeling you get when you watch a Woody Allen movie for the first time, and it's just kind of like, I know I'm going to experience these certain things because they exist in every Woody Allen movie. His quirks, his personality definitely come through the script, especially if he's acting in it. And so there's this excitement that comes with, you know, watching those credits roll for the first time at the beginning and then seeing what's going to happen. But yeah, so he's my number two right now.
Yeah, he's a great pick. And when I talked to Graham, I won't say whether or not Woody Allen was on his list. But when I talked to Graham about Woody Allen, he brought up the humanity in all of his movies. And that's something you know you're going to get, is a glimpse at humanity. And that's one thing I love about Woody Allen, is that he's so specific. You know, his movies are from a very specific point of view, you know, a New York the Jewish person from the, you know, mid to late 20th century. But the best, you know, the most universal things are almost always drawn from very specific things. So, and I think that's what you get with Woody Allen. You get such a, with every movie, you know, even the bad ones, there's still perspectives on life and on being a person that I think are useful and are poignant. And he's another one of those guys that he's just keeps doing his thing, and he's so easily ignored. And every now and then it's good to kind of poke our heads up and be like, hey, this guy's great. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly.
All right, well.
Yeah, number three, if we do this again in 5 years, my number one will probably still be here. I don't know that he'll be number one, but it depends. It just depends on what happens between now and then. But Stanley Kubrick's my number one.
Nice.
Yeah. It's sort of like, yeah, he's got a limited number of films that he was able to make in his career, but it's kind of like that Woody Allen comment that I mentioned, where you sit down and you're so excited to be watching a Stanley Kubrick for the first time. So you really got to like cherish those moments, because they're not all that many. But he's my number one just because I think he just changed so much about filmmaking. And he really pushed the envelope in ways now, so many, you know, several decades after the fact, we kind of see, you know, like, oh man, that's kind of weird, or that's kind of harsh, but we don't, may not necessarily find it completely offensive. But he just really kind of pushed the envelope back then, and such an artist as well. His vision and his design for his films are just like completely one of a kind. And now, while I don't like every single one of his movies, even the one that I like, well, Barry Lyndon's one of my least favorite of his movies, but I could watch it, you know, I could watch it anytime. I think the one that I really just didn't like that much, and I need to try it again, is Spartacus.
Even
from The Killing is a great movie. It's like you can see decades before Pulp Fiction similarities between the two, I think. And, yep. And it's kind of the way, and it's non-chronological storytelling and it's editing.
Yeah, I mean, or Reservoir Dogs. I mean, it's structurally, it's so close to Reservoir Dogs. Yeah, I mean, if you just watch Stanley Kubrick's career, you get such a nice, broad summing up of film history, you know, from Killer's Kiss up to Eyes Wide Shut. I mean, if you can get your hands on Fear and Desire, it's worth watching as a Kubrick fan, but it doesn't necessarily tell you anything about cinema or where cinema was at the time. But Killer's Kiss definitely does. And then, yeah, wrapping up with Eyes Wide Shut, that's such a broad selection of movies. And, yeah, there wasn't anything that he didn't kind of dabble in and touch and play with.
Yeah, you know, and such a, like, a great dark comedy like Dr. Strangelove, it's like a nearly perfect movie, technically, and it's so entertaining. And then to go right into, shortly after, to do 2001, which I've always thought, you know, those effects are better than Star Wars, in my opinion. And it's just because of how he kind of uses them in a sort of sparingly. He doesn't try to, you know, there are no lasers being shot out and, you know, sound effects. It's just a quiet space until the end. But, you know, just
right.
the effects there are just minimal, but they're really good. And I always kind of found it weird that people don't recognize that or talk about that more. So, yeah,
yeah.
You know, I almost stopped Clockwork Orange 45 minutes in because I was just, like, not feeling it, and it was really uncomfortable. Man, I'm so glad I finished that movie.
Yeah, for me, Clockwork is the toughest watch of them all, and it's the one I've seen the least, and it probably is going to rank towards the bottom for me, but it's still, you know, it's still essential movie making, and honestly, if you look at it, it might tell you the most about Kubrick, the person, than it may be the most personal of all his movies, which may be why it makes me so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I mean, hey, you know, solid pick. I think most people would feel bad if they didn't include Stanley Kubrick in their top three or their honorable mentions. So yeah, I think you've got him in a pretty good place. So what are some of your runners up?
Well, we know Sidney Lumet.
How you and I have talked about him in the last few times we've recorded, I had a suspicion that he may even make your top three. But, yeah, I'm glad to see him on the runner-up.
Yeah, so I feel like I've seen so many of his movies, but then I was just looking at his filmography the other day, and there are so many that I have not seen.
Yeah.
And I really feel like there's just so much of Lumet that I need to tap into.
Yeah,
that's
how I am, too. There's so much more work I need to do.
Well, this was really a close one with Wes Anderson. This one totally could have been number three, but it's the Coens.
Yeah.
Because they just keep making good movies. They don't stop making good movies, so I had to consider them. Also, Scorsese, Tarantino, Christopher Nolan, and Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, all great picks. Yeah, the Coen brothers, they're kind of, for me, they're getting to the Kubrick point in terms of, like, they work so meticulously at everything they do. And I guess you could say this about Paul Thomas Anderson, too. They work so meticulously at everything they do that it's like, and they're trying so hard to do something different every time you know, we're so lucky to have them. It's always a new Coen Brothers movie is always a mystery, and it's always, you know, exciting to see what direction they're going to go.
Yeah, and it's and these days, well, No Country, I particularly was blown away immediately, but these days, I think with the Coens, it's kind of like, what are we going to get? Are we going to get like a light Coen comedy, which is not without its deep message or dark material, but are we going to get a Fargo or are we going to get a Big Lebowski?
Yeah.
So I think with each film, I watch it, and while I may have my feeling immediately, it's usually like a week later where I can actually assess that movie, and then also like where it falls on how I rank it amongst their other movies. Yeah, but Inside Llewyn Davis, it's like way up at the top. But yeah, I liked it immediately, but it took a while to really see where it was going to fall on its list. But man, it just got so many great, great movies.
Yeah, and so rewatchable too, and they get better with, I think that's always a good mark of a great director, is that the movie gets better upon subsequent viewings. So
too true.
Okay, Ben, it's Film Nerds Unlimited issue 50, and I'm going to ask you a very tough question. Who are your three favorite directors of all time right now? You know, obviously this could change. List them off, starting with three.
Well, first of all, I hate this question.
Uh-huh.
It sucks, and I hate you for asking. But
uh-huh.
Congratulations on episode 50. It's a great accomplishment.
Hey, congratulations. You've been a major part of it. So.
Well, sure. But my number three is the toughest because the top two are in such, like, they're so firm and they're not going anywhere that this made number three really hard. And I tossed a bunch of names around. I mean, there are the obvious greats like Kubrick and Hitchcock. There are the newer elite talents like the Andersons, Paul Thomas and Wes. And, you know, Tarantino is a guy, I think, for guys our age who obviously hovers on a list like this, but he didn't quite make it for me. So I just thought of, like, which director or directors are the most special, I guess, and who are just so key in my life as a young moviegoer, the coming of age of a moviegoer in the Flanagan household anyway. And I think if I'm just being totally honest with myself, the movies that really meant a lot to me and shaped me as you know, a young person with a critical eye and mind and just love for film, and it's Joel and Ethan Coen. And the movies that did that were Raising Arizona and Fargo and Barton Fink and just a handful of others, obviously, that really I think are the highlights of their career, but also the highlights of my young life as a moviegoer. And they, to me, I think were the first guys that really showed me the difference between themselves and other filmmakers and between one film and another. They just had such a distinct style, and they really spoke to me growing up, and they still speak to me now, and I think they're doing some of their best work now. So they're my number three. Number two is Woody Allen. And again, this was tough. He could easily be number one because I think his batting average is unbelievable, especially when you consider the output. He's so creative, and he's just in, like, you look at the filmography and it's just exhausting to process as a moviegoer. I can only imagine what it's like as a filmmaker to make one nearly every year, two in some cases. And I mean, it's hard to pick the favorites there, but I mean, you think of stuff like Annie Hall and Manhattan and Hannah and Her Sisters and Crimes and Misdemeanors, and ones that are really special to me personally, like Bullets Over Broadway, Sweet and Lowdown, Stardust Memories. I mean, the list goes on and on, and he is still just on fire as a filmmaker, as a writer, too. So I'll never get tired of Woody Allen. I'll revisit his movies forever, and he could, again, easily just be my favorite filmmaker, and on some days he definitely is. But then my number one, I think that this is going to be shared among a lot of the film nerds, but it's got to be Steven Spielberg. It just has to be. And the guy's name is synonymous with movies, and it will be that way forever. But this guy's, I mean, call it what you will. I mean, any kind of movie that he makes, whether it's adventure, fantasy, something steeped in history and realism like Schindler's List and Munich. But, I mean, the ones that I obviously go to lean towards the most are things like Jaws and Close Encounters. Those are movies that are either in or tiptoe around my top 10 of all time. But Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., I mean, God, we could talk about this guy forever, and I just think that it's just important that we just kind of sum him up as the greatest ever, and it's going to be hard to argue, I think, for a lot of people. I think elitist film snobs out there would probably agree and give in and say that Spielberg is the greatest, or he belongs with the greatest of all time, but he just has shaped my life as a film goer, both as a child and as an adult. Well, as an adult, he makes me feel like a child when I still watch his movies today. So I'll watch his movies forever. I hope to show my children in the future his movies and get as much out of them in the future as I have so far in my life. So Steven Spielberg has to be number one, Woody Allen number two, and the Coen brothers number three. And that's just today. It could change any minute.
Yeah, I mean, I think an interesting thing you mentioned about when a question like this is thrown at a movie buff is that it makes you look at not what the filmmaker has done for you lately, which I think is how we often look at filmmakers, but really looking at, all right, what is the sum of their high points? So if you've got somebody like Woody Allen who, you know, sometimes he makes a movie that's critically acclaimed and sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he makes movies that are personally satisfying you and sometimes he doesn't. But that's not the criteria that you can go on when somebody throws an all-time favorite movie director at you. So I think it's really good to kind of assess these careers that way, is to say, all right, so, you know, maybe you know, you're not so hot on, just using it as an example, if somebody's not so hot on Lincoln, that doesn't mean that you bar Steven Spielberg from the conversation. So, hey, man, that's a great list. Those are all good good people at making movies. Awesome, man. Well, that was satisfying. So you mentioned some runners up. Would Tarantino be a runner up for you? What are some others?
Kind of a distant runner up. I think the guys who are really on the outside looking in for me personally, again, are Paul Thomas Anderson, Wes Anderson. Those guys, to me, they have yet to make a bad movie. I love everything they've done so far. Stanley Kubrick, obviously, is somebody who will forever be one of the most influential voices and stylists in film. And I'm deeply fascinated with every single thing that he has made. And I learn so much, and I learn something new every time I watch one of his movies. And there are still a couple of his that I haven't seen yet, the early stuff like Killer's Kiss and Fear and Desire. So there still are Stanley Kubrick movies that I haven't seen yet, which is a really exciting prospect for me. Tarantino he's definitely a guy that's out there for me. I don't know that I could call him my favorite. He has definitely made some of my favorite movies. Reservoir Dogs, Kill Bill, Inglourious Basterds, Pulp Fiction. I mean, I think any sane moviegoer would tell you that those are some of the greatest movies ever made, or at least their personal favorites. So you have to include him in the discussion. But there are a lot of new filmmakers that I really love so much. I mean, we talk about Christopher Nolan a lot. I mean, I wish that I could include like Pixar as one filmmaker, but there are so many filmmakers at Pixar who probably will belong in a list like this in the very near future. But just Pixar as a studio is something that I personally like to consider as one of my favorite filmmakers, or at least film generators. So, yeah, there's really a lot to chew on here. And, again, it's grueling and painful for, you know, to pick a favorite anything in art, but that's what we do here at Film Nerds. And it's fun, and it's good fodder for discussion. And, you know, this list in particular, to settle on three favorite all time is just, it seems impossible. And I feel like I'm doing the rest of these filmmakers that I love so much a total disservice. But here we are.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time to share with me the only three filmmakers that you like, and by proxy, a giant list of filmmakers that you absolutely hate, and think are bad directors.
I just feel bad for Andrew Bergman, leaving him off.
Franco Smile here from the Dawn of the Dad podcast. I'm honored to be asked to give my contribution to the 50th episode of Film Nerds Unlimited. Congrats, everyone. You made it. So when Ben asked me to talk a little bit about my top three directors of all time, I was very upset with him, because in many states that would constitute as cruel and unusual punishment, and I couldn't think about what I had done to deserve such a thing. But after I thought it over, I decided I would do the fishbowl method, which is I narrowed it down to my 10 favorite, which in itself was really tough because I had to leave off directors like Werner Herzog, Francois Truffaut, Hal Ashby, Alfred Hitchcock, I know, Terry Gilliam, Pedro Almodovar, Francis Ford Coppola, Michael Mann, and Robert Altman, and amongst many more others. And so I narrowed it down to those 10, and I said, I'm not going to rank my top 10. I'm going to have these 10, and I'm going to randomly pick 3 names and then talk about them. And I figured I'd do that now on the air. So I've put the names of the following in this fishbowl, and it's, spoilers, it's not really a fishbowl. And I will randomly draw 3 and speak off the top of my head why I like these people so much. So here are the 10 names that are in the fishbowl, in no particular order. Richard Linklater, David Lynch, Sidney Lumet, Joel and Ethan Coen, Steven Soderbergh, Stanley Kubrick, Roman Polanski, Akira Kurosawa, Billy Wilder, and David Cronenberg. Okay, here goes nothing. And the first person I will be talking about is Roman Polanski. Now, he's one of those directors who, in my opinion, were just born to direct. Like in any craft and art, you can practice and learn and get really good. But some people have a more natural natural leanings towards their profession. And I feel like Roman Polanski is one of those kinds of guys who's just really meant to direct. He's very fluent in the language of cinematic storytelling. It's like he was born with a knack for it. And he really bridges content and form together in a great way and can really bring out the emotion that he wants to manipulate the audience with. And it really helps that the kind of content or the ideas that he explores in his films are kind of a little bit sick and twisted, like with Rosemary's Baby or Chinatown, Knife in the Water, Cul-de-Sac, Repulsion, and kind of shows the seedier side of the human condition and how people treat each other if given the opportunity. And I really like those types of films and stories. I don't know what it says about me, but I find them to be really fascinating. So Roman Polanski is one of my top 3. Next up, Billy Wilder. What can I say about Billy Wilder that a million people haven't said already? He's got a great knack for dialogue. It's a cliche, but movies aren't really written that way anymore. They're so smart and witty, his films. I haven't seen that many. The man had very many. I've seen around 10. But he had a very varied filmography. He made one of the greatest films noir of all time in Double Indemnity, and one of the greatest indictment of journalism and opportunism in Ace in the Hole, a great World War II POW film in Stalag 17. He made the romantic comedy Quirky and Palpable in The Major and the Minor and in Sabrina, and in Some Like It Hot. A lot of people consider that to be one of the greatest comedies of all time if we're looking at just, the AFI list. And also with my top 2 of his, Sunset Boulevard and The Apartment, he made Well, The Apartment is possibly one of my favorite films and my favorite Christmas movie of all time. I think that it's equal parts funny, charming, sad, and really kind of makes you think. And also, it's a great New York film. And Sunset Boulevard, another great kind of noirish film, kind of a love letter to Hollywood, but laced with some poison in it. And so, yeah, that's Billy Wilder, really great filmmaker. And I love that he really dug Ernst Lubitsch's work and had above his office, above his desk, a big old sign that said, "What would Lubitsch do?" So that's pretty awesome. Let me see if this is still recording. It is. Okay. So that's two of the three, Billy Wilder and Roman Polanski. Let's see. Lucky number three. Here we have... Hold on a second. Let me do this again. David Lynch. Okay. What can I say about David Lynch? Very strange man. Yeah. Great man. He's kind of half here for things that maybe aren't specifically movie, like the Twin Peaks show, and also his whole public persona. I really, really admire, and I love his inspirational talks, and then how he talks about creativity and how it's inside all of us, and all you have to do is kind of get in touch with it by listening and meditating. And I love that he doesn't talk about his films and what they mean, and he understands that they're a lot more powerful if he doesn't. But in terms of his films themselves, I really like the surrealism in some of them. I like the kind of daring in the execution of them. I like the subtle and not so subtle ways that he can execute his vision and Blue Velvet is kind of one of my favorite movies of all time, so there goes that. And David Lynch is he's an acquired taste, and it took me a while to get into him, but when I did, things just kind of clicked and I haven't looked back. So I guess those are my three out of many favorites. And thank you so much for inviting me onto the show in general, and for the 50th, I was going to say anniversary, but we're a little far away from that, for the 50th episode. So thank you, Ben Stark, and the rest of the Film Nerds community, and here's to 50 more.
Okay, Matt, we are the last of the Film Nerds to give our top three favorite directors for this 50th episode and all-star episode of Film Nerds Unlimited. And I guess we'll just go ahead and get right into it. We'll go 3-1. So go ahead and hit me with your number three, and then throw it back to me, and I'll go with my number three.
Okay, so my number three is the Coen brothers. They're the last one in, and I feel like I am unreasonably harsh on them sometimes, because essentially there's a period of their careers where I loved everything they did so hard. I mean, pretty much their first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah. I mean, their first 7 movies are basically perfect. And I love everything about them. and they're incredible, and they get better every time I watch them. And they've still made really, really good movies since those first seven, just not with the same frequency, and they've made some that I don't like. But, I mean, these are – I'm getting nitpicky because ultimately these are two guys that have made, you know, half a dozen of my favorite movies of all time. And that's – I mean, they're incredible. They're so influential. I mean, I would say they probably are a major influence on a lot of other people that are among my – if we've expanded this to like a top 20, a lot of those guys on that list would probably be – really, really influenced by what the Coens have done. And their style is, it's very diverse too, even though you can watch all of their movies and see a cohesiveness to what they're trying to do as a single artist, you know, as a single voice over the course of their career. But the fact that we're talking about the same directors made Blood Simple and Raising Arizona and Miller's Crossing and Barton Fink. Just their first four movies are so incredibly different, and yet there is some thread that runs through those movies that makes it unquestionable that it was made by the same person. And, you know, I just think I'm probably biased towards directors that have a very distinctive voice that sets them apart in a big way from everybody else. I don't know quite why that makes as much of an impression on me. But I mean, I think that's what I love about them is from day one, they were making something that was really, really different. I mean, you can go back and watch Blood Simple now and go, gosh, they're so weird. Like in a great way, and right up until Inside Llewyn Davis, I mean, which I loved a lot. I know we all have very different feelings about it, but I think they're still making movies that have that very distinct quality to them that makes it a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I had to pick like the best working director, it's the Coen Brothers. I think that they consistently make movies that are unique and original and always new. But unfortunately, this isn't a best working list for me, and because I feel so bad for not having them on my top three because they are so formative. They are so they're so inspirational to me personally, and all of their movies are so rewatchable and rich that it's tough to leave them off, and this is a tough list to make. But if I'm going with all time, if this was just all time like filmmakers, the Coen Brothers may be on may have to make my top three. But because it's an all time directors list, I have to because so much of their strength is in the screenwriting. I'm going with more just kind of strictly directing. Directors, if that makes any sense with my
sure.
list.
You're the guy that actually knows what directing is here, so your list is going to look very different than mine.
Hey, I don't actually, but I will tell you that I do. But one of the things that I think directing is how you use space, how you use the space between the camera and the subject and one another, and the subjects in the background. So I think that's kind of the unifying theme in mine is guys that really know how to use space, use editing space, you know, use time and pacing. The guy that I feel like does this extremely well, and that every time I watch one of his movies, every scene is arranged in such a beautiful way and in a way that I think influenced so many that came after him, and that's Akira Kurosawa. I think that all of his movies have so much to say about life, about what it is to be a person, but then are also very entertaining. They're very universal. He could handle comedy. He could handle action extremely well. The action in Seven Samurai is just is literally groundbreaking. The way he filmed and edited and staged that.
They legit shot arrows at people.
There's the ending of Throne of Blood. He's this hardcore masculine filmmaker who is also extremely sensitive and is able to be a poet. He's able to be a warrior in ways. He's able to be a painter. He painted his storyboards, but with a painterly eye, never forgot how to use the depth of a frame or editing. He thought in terms of pure cinema, and he's a guy that I'm glad he's got such a large filmography, because I know I'll always enjoy going back to see either rewatching a movie I've seen before or finding something new in Kurosawa. And I know he has such a Western style over somebody like Ozu, another Japanese master. And I guess that Western quality is what appeals to me about his work, for better or worse. So my number three is Akira Kurosawa.
I love Kurosawa, by the way, even though he's not
he's
in my top three. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's good.
So my number two is Woody Allen. And even right. though you kind of like submarined my idea of choosing filmmakers that write their movies too, and that probably has something to do with why I like all of their movies. I do think Woody Allen, if part of a director's job is getting actors to give their best possible performances and to embrace the characters that are on the page and turn them into something on screen, I think Woody Allen's perhaps directed more great performances than any other director that's ever lived. And a lot of that does have to do with his longevity. He's directed 50-something movies, I think, now, and I've seen all of them, and I love the vast majority of them. But there are so many. I mean, we've had entire podcasts about just where we just sit here and list great Woody Allen performances. And, I think he's so good at whatever it is that a director has to do to bring a character to life through his cast. I think Woody Allen's got to be considered one of the best of all time at doing that. And as recently as, I thought he did some really fantastic stuff in his most recent film, Irrational Man, which has not gotten a lot of attention or particularly positive reviews, but he gets really terrific stuff out of his cast. I would say it's maybe Emma Stone's best performance of her career, but Blue Jasmine, I mean, he's still producing Oscar caliber performances out of his actors as recently as 2013 with Blue Jasmine. And I mean, that's the primary reason I've got him up here. Not that he hasn't also done some incredible visual directing over the course of his career. I don't think it's as much of a focus or a factor that jumps out at you at his more recent work. But I mean, I think from his 70s and 80s work, he did some really incredible things with black and white photography and the way that he moved the camera that were really different for their time, and they really stood out. And, he's still going, and he's still making really, really interesting movies. And it's totally fair when people use the criticism that Woody Allen's movies all feel the same and that they're derivative of one another. But, I would say the same thing. I would go back to what I said about the Coen brothers, and that is that there's a distinct voice that runs through all of his movies and a distinct perspective. And over the course of all of his movies, I think you get to see a bunch of different angles of the same brain that created all of this work, the same mind. There are the variations are interesting to me. I think that's kind of what makes it fun of seeing a new movie from him.
Yeah, absolutely. Believe it or not, Woody Allen has come up on this show so far.
Yeah, I'm not shocked.
Yeah, no, I know. It's and with good reason. And I think a really great example of what you're talking about is crimes and misdemeanors, which I think sums up, you know, a lot of both, you know, the two sides of Woody Allen's brain so well. My number two is Orson Welles. I kind of said earlier that this is just for directing, and Orson Welles I think could stand alone as that, but there is also something to Orson Welles' independent spirit. I think that that puts him high on my list. But putting that aside for a second, just the way he thinks, he literally rethought the way that movies are made. He rethought the way that cinematic space can be communicated, he was a freak of nature, the way his brain worked and the way that he put together movies was just ahead of his time constantly. If you look at obviously Citizen Kane, but also even into the 70s with F for Fake, the way that F for Fake is edited and the way that it uses, you know, quick bits of color and sound and visuals to communicate something greater is 10 years at least ahead of what mainstream cinema was doing. So even in his latter, not-so-glorious days, he was still revolutionizing the form. But people don't really talk much about his later classics, but I'm an outspoken fan of The Trial, which I think is fantastic and just kind of evocative nightmare. I mentioned F for Fake. His Shakespeare, Othello, and Macbeth are all very interesting. And he is just the independent spirit of Orson Welles. You could give him a whole studio to play with, and he'll give you Citizen Kane. But then you can also give him public domain scraps, he'll make something as insane as The Trial. He's just a personal hero. He's a great director, he just like Kurosawa, he thinks in terms of cinema. He thinks visually and in terms of editing and staging. So number two is Orson Welles.
So we're at my number one now?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, I'm going with Martin Scorsese actually on this one. And I think, you know, this was a thing that I kind of debated which order I was going to put these three names in. And my order doesn't really make any sense. And so I ultimately kind of went with my gut for putting Scorsese first, because when I think about his movies, I have more intense feelings and memories about them than I do even Coen Brothers movies and Woody Allen movies that I love so much. I think maybe it's revealing something of myself to see that, you know, I chose these two for my two and three, these filmmakers that, you know, have kind of a lot in common with each other in this sort of dark, contemplative way of looking at the world. And there's some cynicism, but also the ability to appreciate beauty and all of that. There's a lot of in common between the Coens and Woody Allen. And then you've got Scorsese is so completely kind of the opposite. I mean, I don't know if he's opposite, but he's nowhere close to them on the spectrum. It's this super high energy, vibrant filmmaker that explores, you know, completely different territory to them in these very extreme, at times very unrelatable characters. And he sort of digs into them just to see how dark their minds are, you know? His movies are, I don't always understand why they speak to me as strongly as they do, And I'll never forget. I mean, like watching, I don't have anything in common with anybody in Raging Bull, but it's a movie that just so incredibly moved me the first time I saw it. And, you know, The King of Comedy is another movie about a bunch of characters that it's really hard to gain any foothold on any of them and understand what your common ground is with them. But it's somehow an incredibly captivating movie to watch. You know, I mean, I would say, I'm just running down the list. Like the last, he made a movie about Jesus. If you want to talk about unrelatable characters, right? Like this is a guy who was not afraid to go into that territory. And of course, I mean, I would say if you look at his two great gangster films, you know, Goodfellas and Casino, that get lumped together often, but they're about a bunch of psychopaths and somehow you go on a journey with the characters in those movies and you, I don't know if it's sympathy that you feel at the end for them, but you kind of are in their heads by the end of those movies. And they're crazy people. They're killers, you know? They're awful people. But he finds a way to kind of, if I'm looking for a sort of a common thread between all of his films, and it's probably not running between all of them, but at least all the ones that I have found myself so moved by, you know, I think he has a way of finding these people that all of us might look at from over on our side of the world and point and say, what the hell is wrong with those people? And he has a way of figuring them out and finding something human in them. And, you know, that's very interesting to me. And it's a very difficult thing to do, not as a filmmaker only, but as a human being. I think we have a tendency as a culture to identify otherness and ostracize it and say, that's not me. And that could never be me. And Scorsese has a way of seeing things through their eyes, no matter how off they are and strange and different and violent and, you know, everything that we don't want to be. So, I mean, I know I'm talking, I'm talking about story to some extent, but I think he made these choices, and I think he took stories that probably not a lot of other directors could make that kind of connection with, and he made those connections with what he did visually and what he did with, you know, all of these incredible things that he does with music, obviously, that just really draws you in to the world that these characters are living in. It's very visceral filmmaking. You really, really feel like you are there and a part of it. I think that really helps with what I'm talking about when it terms of, you know, his ability to get you inside the head of a person that you would think you have, you know, absolutely nothing in common with.
Yeah, I mean, he, the anxiety and the agitation of the mind and just kind of seemingly, the inability to bottle mental energy, like that, those are all things that he communicates visually. You know, you think about the paranoia helicopter sequence from Goodfellas. That's all communicated visually. So yeah, absolutely. Those themes that you're talking about of getting inside the heads of people that that seem so unapproachably damaged. That's something that he does not through dialogue and not through screenwriting. But he does it with he does it visually. He does it with cinema. Scorsese is somebody that he was so hard to leave off this list. For me. He, like you said, he is able to communicate I would see it as a masculine thing, again, masculine problem of not knowing why we do things, not knowing why we want what we want, and that contradiction that constantly, you know, pulls at us, in our own heads.
So I think that's something that, that Scorsese does well, and something I personally relate to. So yeah, he was tough for me to leave off, and I like that you brought up the empathy, because that's also something that is a hallmark of my number one. Who's, it's not going to be any surprise, is Steven Spielberg.
Saw that coming from miles away.
It wasn't tough. He's always kind of been up there, but for so many of these same reasons, he's able to put us in the shoes of other people. He's able to communicate. I think one of the most enduring themes in Spielberg movies is the desire to be home, the desire to recognize that there's something missing about where we're at, and needing to, you know, go after that missing thing, wherever it is, whatever it is, and just that desire to be home. Obviously, you know, E.T. phone home is kind of one of the most quotable lines from his filmography, and I think it also sums up his whole resume. But just in terms of cinema, this guy just, you can give him any scene and he puts the camera in the right place. He moves it to the right, to the right place. He has the actors in the right arrangements. My wife and I recently watched The Sugarland Express. I'd seen it before, and kind of underrated it and thought, you know, that's a quaint, you know, little movie. But then I watched it again, and the staging and the compositions that and the editing that he was capable of at such a young age, it's this guy, as soon as he started seeing things and as soon as he started putting together the world, as a little kid, must have been seeing the world the way that a movie should look. And obviously I'm going to overstate that probably, but Steven Spielberg movies look the way that movies should look. He just knows how to do it. He knows how to speak in proper cinematic grammar for clarity, again for geography and space. And he does all that while making movies that help us understand other people. You know, he doesn't just say, look, I make good action movies, so that's what I'm going to do. He actually rises to the challenge of making message movies, which a lot of people give him trouble for. But when you're that talented, do you not have a certain responsibility to use it, you know, to make society a little bit better? So you get something like Schindler's List, which is both, you know, it's both great cinema and great social justice. He's real good. Steven Spielberg is a good director.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, and it's we recently did a show, Ben Flanagan and I, about seeing Jaws on the big screen. And we're leading up to Bridge of Spies, and in the last few years, I just have to, every time I have a little less interest in movies, or if I get frustrated on a project or whatever, if I just don't really, you know, maybe movies aren't that special, I just have to take a break and watch a single scene from a Spielberg movie, and it's all ignited again. I'm a movie nerd born anew. So number one for me is Steven Spielberg. Would he be on your runner-up list?
For sure. I think the ones that I would have just left off would be Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, even though it's not a tremendously deep filmography, but just the stuff that he did is so strong. And then another, the one that I thought really hard about too, and thought about saying, and I'll say it now anyway, I have this sneaking suspicion that in 10 years, Edgar Wright might replace the Coen brothers on my list here. But
wow,
he needs maybe like four more movies before I'm ready to say it. And I wish he would make more movies. I wish we had more Edgar Wright movies already. you know, it's like, it's almost heartbreaking to me that we only have four Edgar Wright movies. But
right.
I love every minute of all four of those movies so much. I mean, just like pound for pound, Edgar Wright would be way up there for me. But I just need to see him work more. I need to see him mature more as a filmmaker and get further into his career. Tarantino isn't up there for me, even though I love all of his movies. And I'm mostly because I think that a lot of what he, this is probably a pretty common criticism. It's not a criticism, but I mean, everything I love about Tarantino pretty much came from Martin Scorsese, probably. So, not that that means it doesn't count. I just think
it's something
is a really good at taking things other people have done really well in the past and putting them into interesting arrangements together.
Well, it's like the reverse of it's the reverse of something that Graham and I talked about, which is look, when you're picking great directors from the last 20, 30, 40 years, you're probably also picking whoever influenced them. So when you're picking Steven Spielberg as your favorite director, you're also kind of picking Alfred Hitchcock using so many of those things. So it's kind of the inverse of that to say, you know, if you did put Tarantino on there.
I don't have to
there,
pick Tarantino because I picked
Exactly. Yeah. There you go.
And I don't have to pick, Edgar Wright necessarily just yet because, again, Scorsese. So and probably some Coen too.
Oh, definitely.
I think these all three, you know, my all three of the guys that I listed are still actively out there making movies, thankfully, and it's so exciting to me every time I get to see a new one from them. And really they're all kind of on pretty good streaks for me right now. They're the last movie all three of them made were movies that I really, really liked a lot, especially Scorsese. I didn't think he had Wolf of Wall Street in him still, you know, and it's so cool to see that, that incredible energy. It was just as much that he had back when he made Goodfellas, you know, or Mean Streets or something like that. It's like, he had a much bigger budget obviously here, but you watch Wolf of Wall Street and you go, golly, how old is this guy? Like, this is like a movie that's made by a 24-year-old or something.
Yeah, I thought he stopped using cocaine.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, I'm still really excited about all three of them, too, and I still think they all hopefully have a good, solid, you know, chunk of their filmography left in them. That's a fun thing to walk around knowing that, like, hey, I made my list of my three favorite directors and they're still all working and making movies.
Yeah, that's a great feeling. I definitely get the guys that, like, you're like, man, I bet you they're going to be on this list. For me, Brad Bird is kind of one of those guys. I would totally have him on my runner-up list, but, you know, his filmography is still kind of slim. Another runner-up that would definitely be on that list is Michael Curtiz. Casablanca and The Seahawk, even something like Dodge City. The guy just hopped around from genre to genre and just nailed it every time. And again, picking Spielberg is kind of picking Curtiz because there's a lot of that same, the shadow play and the compositions and the long takes. A lot of that comes from Curtiz. And then filmmakers like he and John Ford. John McTiernan is actually a filmmaker that I have personally found a lot of fun in, and just again in terms
he definitely
of
definitely has made one of my probably if I had to bring five movies to a desert island for the rest of my life to watch, he's made one of those. So
absolutely, yeah, and everything good about Die Hard, you know, says is that kind of makes up John McTiernan. You know, his scripts weren't always great. But the way he used space, the way he used pacing and editing, he just does it right, and just a big fan. Obviously, Scorsese would be on my list. Werner Herzog is another personal favorite of mine. I could probably keep going for a long time, but I will. The last runner up I'll say is Chuck Jones, director of so many great Looney Tunes cartoons, and probably my favorite animation director.
Also
over Bradford.
Very influential, for sure, on live action filmmakers.
Oh, absolutely. There's a Chuck Jones cartoon in Sugarland Express. So
now you don't have to
connection.
Now you don't have to pick Sam Raimi.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a runner up because you've got Chuck Jones. Yeah,
absolutely.
Hi everyone, Ben Stark here. We were hoping to get Francesca Scalisi of Cinematrimony involved, but unfortunately we couldn't fit it in the schedule. She sends her regards and mentions that Wes Anderson would definitely be on her top three directors of all time list. So thanks again for listening. Thank you everybody that is tuned in for all 50 or a few of the 50 episodes of Film Nerds Unlimited. It's been really fun so far. Please share our episodes on Facebook and Twitter and social media. And if you get a second, give us a review and a rating, positive preferably, over at iTunes. I think that's one of the best ways for us to pick up new listeners. So thanks for helping us find new listeners, and thanks again for tuning in. Here's to many more. Just kidding, that was fake. Here's the real music.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.